Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
How about I go ahead and address the larger than average elephant in the room?
No, I have never coached the sport that you folks call football. And heck, you could fill two internets with what I don't know about football.
Hold on now. If I were to get fired from my job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
I love that. You know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
It's got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo, rolling on with our Season 2 Ted Lasso rewatch, Episode 10. It was an absolute emotional banger. I am joined, as always, by my co-host. She is never going to give you up or let you down. It is Alex McDaniel. Alex, how are you tonight?
Love that intro. Thank you. Did you come up with that on the fly?
I did. Alex, how is the content at For the Win right now?
We got lots of content. So many sports are happening. So many pieces of content on our website. Definitely check it out.
I'm thrilled to hear that, folks. You can go to just Google For the Win. You will find it. We're not giving out the URL tonight. And
you'll get the URL.
Might be in the show notes. And for a very special episode, we had to invite a very special guest, a guy I'm a huge fan of. It is comedian Corey Ryan Forrester. Corey, how are you doing tonight? Thank you so much for joining us on Big Screen Sports.
I am wonderful, Kyle and Alex. Thank you all for having me.
Of course, absolutely. And you are on tour right now. Tell the folks where you're going, where you're headed, where they can scrounge up those tickets.
I don't know. When do y'all release this?
Thursday.
Okay. So tonight I will be in San Jose. Come say hey, and then let's get some wings at Paper Planes afterwards. How about you? Then on to Huntsville, Alabama, Washington, D.C. I'm about to get the order wrong. I'm just spitting off the dome. Seattle, Spokane, and Nashville in December for our huge Christmas blowout shows. I know that three of those are almost sold out. So it's going to be really fun. We're at Zany's. And just go to wellreadcomedy.com and you can see all that stuff.
I was going to say, yeah, folks want to fact check that list. Do they?
Yeah.
Wellreadcomedy.com. Everyone go check that out. And a little bit of housekeeping for this podcast. Want to welcome some new patrons. That's Nick Merriam, James Kowaluski, and Isaac Pigott. Again, folks, if I get your names wrong, shoot me a message. Let me know. Send me those pronunciations. I'm awful with names. Shout out to our producer level patrons. That's Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, and James Kowaluski. If you go to patreon.com/bigscreensports, you can support this show. You can get episode notes. You get scheduling updates. When I know what's coming on the show, you know what's coming on the show. You can vote for movies and patrons' choice topics covered by the podcast. The October movie, it is at time of recording, of this episode coming out, I think it will be locked up as Love and Basketball for the month of October. New poll will be going up soon for the November movie and going to do a Ted Lasso Season 2 AMA and wrap-up show for the patrons. So go check that out. And most importantly, we've got stickers on that Patreon. That's patreon.com/bigscreensports. Now, let's get to our episode, Ted Lasso, Season 2, Episode 10, No Weddings and a Funeral. Rebecca is stunned by a sudden loss. The team rallies to show their support, but Ted finds himself grappling with a piece of his past. Holy shit, this episode. Something that I think is the hardest in every Ted Lasso episode is picking out like the most emotional moment or your favorite scene or something like that. I feel like, Corey, I feel like in this episode, it's easy, but it's also surrounded by just an incredible episode from start to finish.
Yeah, man. I mean, the tone of this season, like, obviously Ted Lasso's never, they've not missed a beat as far as being funny. And it's, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily say, oh yeah, it's a complete comedy first show, because there is so much heart in there. But this season, man, it's like they all knew that we were all thinking, hey guys, this guy can't just be a completely positive man forever. Like, that doesn't exist. You gotta give it to me. And yeah, man, I probably teared up in this episode as many times as I laughed, and I laughed a lot.
Mm-hmm. And Alex, I think you had a tweet from a couple weeks ago talking about where people have been complaining, where's the conflict in Ted Lasso, and you know, where's the drama in it? And I think, and you said it was like two episodes ago, you were like, here it is. Well, now here it really is.
No, yeah, I think, like, I don't really understand. And I was going to ask Corey about this later in the episode, because I'll just talk about it now. So, you know, like, obviously in talking to Corey, like, he's hilarious, we know this, but he's also a huge mental health advocate. And if you follow him, you know that. And we've talked before about how people tend to, when you're a performer, they tend to want you to be one thing. And just like this show, everybody fell in love with it in the first season because it was hopeful and uplifting. And I feel like everybody who truly has not liked it this season, it's because they want it to be one thing. And it's just been interesting because the complaints I see are not really about the story. It's not really about the writing. They just didn't want to get this real this fast, I think. And sorry, that's life.
Yeah. And I think it's fair. Like, look, if that's the show you were looking for, it's clearly not that right now. And you obviously have the right to be like, yeah, I was just kind of looking for something to only make me feel good the whole time. And I do think that, like, the reason that Ted Lasso season one came out the gate smashing in, frankly, I mean, it's probably the most, the thing that's changed my mind the quickest on a show. Like, going into this, I was like, there's no way this works. It doesn't work. It's a commercial. It's based on a commercial. It'll be good for a couple episodes. And I don't know what I was thinking. It's like, oh yeah, wait, it's Bill Lawrence and Jason Sudeikis, you idiot. Like, they're going to figure out a way. But I think the reason that the first season worked so well is because we were all collectively going through the same thing, which, like, since 9/11 hasn't really happened in America, where we all have the same problem. And it was such a warm blanket. And it was just this one thing we had that there's no animosity. But again, artistically, I'm like, yeah, but everyone knows that's not real. So we got to pull the cover back a little bit. So, like, as someone who likes making shows, it's awesome.
Yeah. And there's season one was fairly continuously uplifting, as Alex said. I mean, there were shades of what we've really unpacked in season two, but for the most part, it was let's get happy. Let's smile a lot. Let's feel good. And then in season two, we've kind of dove more into even more human problems and stuff like that. But I would say that the hopeful feeling is something that we still get out of all these episodes, and something it does so well. And that we watch, it's very difficult, that scene with Ted and Dr. Sharon this episode, but we watch Ted have a major breakthrough, and not, you know, it's nothing that's going to flip a switch and make everything okay for him. But we watch him be vulnerable and open up and have this moment that he has really been swallowing for, you know, probably over half his life now at this point. And that stuff is just as important for us to see, and in a different way feels just as good as, you know, watching Roy walk on the field to She's a Rainbow and stuff like that. Alex, when you wrapped this one, this was a lot to take in, because, I mean, for you, you guessed a plot point right in this one, so you were able to wave that flag as well. But when you wrapped this episode, what kind of washed over you?
I, you know, it's interesting. I watched it with Adam Amin, who was our guest a few weeks ago. He's not traveling to some game, like, we'll typically FaceTime watch at the same time. We were both just crying the whole time. And so it's one of those episodes, like, you get done with it and then you have to watch it again just to process what happened, because there's just a lot of, and I know it's a lot of, like, personal projecting on my part. It's just hard to watch any show or episode that has, like, a parent and a funeral, and it's sad, you know. But I think when I went back and watched it, I just felt really uneasy about a lot of things, and I didn't like it. And not in the way that I did after we found out Sam and Rebecca were texting each other, or after even they hooked up. There's a lot going on in this episode that I feel like is not going to work out for anybody. And I feel like the whole world's about to fall apart, even though there are only two episodes left. So it was great, but it just left me, you don't feel like any loose ends are really tied up here, except Rebecca's relationship with her mother.
Yeah. The last thing we do in all these episodes is like, what question do you want answered at the end of this? And I think after this episode, I have the most questions and the most uncertainty about what's going to happen next. Not to say that the show has been entirely predictable, but this is definitely the most where I feel like the most balls are up in the air right now. And I'm not really sure where things are going to land. Corey, I don't know how you feel, but I thought I had a really good grasp on this season. Like four episodes ago, I felt like I had a good idea of where we're headed. And now I have no idea.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, you know, in the first season, like we were watching all these individual character journeys and the stakes weren't necessarily, you know, ridiculously high, which obviously helps something to be a warm blanket show. It's like, oh, everything will probably work out and it's fine. But now that we've got Sam and Rebecca and Roy and Keeley, now we've got characters that we've fallen in love with who are now with each other. And so one thread pulls and someone's heart's going to get broke and the entire world can kind of shatter. Ted is really crushing me right now. I would like to point out how great I think it is that they are making him so vulnerable and making him so heartbreaking on camera, because in any other show, you know, like you watch The Wire and you see, it's like, oh yeah, of course, you know, McNulty's going through some depression issues. Look at the guy, he's alcoholic. He works the heroin beat, like, but not really ever in a show do you get the person who is in a lot of ways the true face of depression, which is, has it completely all together on the outside. You would never know it. Cause I mean, we all know the person who we've been to their funeral and everybody's like, I would have never seen it coming. That's Ted Lasso. And that, to my knowledge, I've never seen that on TV. And I think that's very, very, very important. So I'm feeling sad about it for the show, but I'm feeling awesome about it as looking forward into how I guess the media treats depression and sort of removes the stigma. And I thought it was a great episode. If I can cry and laugh, it's great. And I cry more now, and I cried during this episode.
It was an emotional gut punch in a lot of ways. As guest, you have to go first in picking the best scene, and this, you can interpret this any which way you want. It's your favorite scene. It's what you thought the best scene was. What, you know, when you wrap this episode, what's the one that stands out? I think it's kind of an easy choice, but yeah, there's also a lot of great attachments in this one.
There were a lot of great scenes. When I was rewatching it before I got to this scene, I had two more written down, but I'm very glad.
Do we want to go honorable mentions for each of us and then talk about the scene?
Well, I mean, I'm glad that I'm going first just because I know that mine is y'all's too. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be repeating myself. Can I give you my honorable mention before I give you my scene? Okay, honorable mention was the scene where Roy and Keeley are getting ready for the funeral and they're bullshitting back and forth. And oh my God, what was the line? She goes, funerals are weird. Excuse me. That was what Sasha said. Yeah. She goes, what would you do if you got hit by a bus? I'd hope you'd go find the bus driver and take care of what happened to me. Avenge me, Keeley. Avenge me. I thought that was all great. Because it was just a funny comedy moment. I love this relationship so much. They are the Jim and Pam for another generation. They're absolutely wonderful. But I mean, the best scene was the Ted and Rebecca, Ted talking to the therapist, Rebecca talking to her mom, and them cutting back and forth in what I like to call Frasier-esque fashion. You know, that it wasn't like, it wasn't Frasier, but like they used to always do those things where like a door opens and we finish this sentence, then the door opens, we finish that sentence. And I just thought that was great because it was dark. It was, I mean, going to a place where like, man, you're both admitting that you hate your dad. This is really, really intense right now. It was just well executed, well done. And aside from the writing, I mean, Jason Sudeikis is, boy, can that man act. And you know, I mean, that goes without saying.
I often talk in this show about when you're watching a scene in a movie or TV show and you're watching someone win an award. I always go back to My Cousin Vinny. You're watching Marissa Tomei snatch that Oscar in that scene at the end. And this was like watching two people snatch Emmys simultaneously between Hannah Waddingham and Jason Sudeikis. And I know, Alex, we just watched the Emmys. We talked about the Emmys on last week's episode. Did we see two consecutive wins from Jason and Hannah Waddingham at this one?
Yeah, I think so. Unless Hax comes back and tries to steal some more awards. But no,
Hax.
Is that you saying you're not a Hax fan? Okay.
Oh, no, I like Hax. It was just the joke, you know, being... I wanted them to sweep all the categories, but yeah. Hax is nice.
I love Hax so much. Please start a Hax podcast and I'll do it too.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I have to finish it. But no, I thought it was brilliant. I thought, you know, at first, like I thought it was a little silly that it was on the same day. And that's just me being nitpicky about the writing, right? Did it have to be on the same day, like the Fridays, September 13th or whatever?
Sure.
You know, it was just like, at first, I changed my mind after. I just thought we were going to get into something that was a little trite. I don't know. And then it unfolds. And I think like her mom plays off of her so well and kind of lets her have that scene. And obviously, God, what's her name? Sharon. Dr. Sharon does the same thing with Ted. But yeah, it was awful. And it just shows you, it illustrates in a perfect scene how we come out of childhood, even good childhoods, we can come out with a lot of trauma. And it may not be your trauma or your trauma, but it comes from the same people, right? You're being raised and conditioned by these people. And the pain that certain things can cause long after you're out of the house, it's profound. And you don't have to be a person who is completely estranged from their family to have been abused in some way or been traumatized by growing up. And I thought that was just a really powerful way to show that.
And it's incredible the range of Sudeikis in that scene, because he's talking the trauma of finding his dad, how angry he was at him, how he still harbors a lot of that. You know, he says for quitting on him and his mom. And that's something that's been a theme of Ted. That's something that we unpacked, you know, last season with his divorce, when he said he never quit on anything. Now we know why. But then that range comes into him telling, you know, after Sharon asked him the question, what did he love about his dad? She knows Ted loved his dad. That's why he's taking this so hard. The story, I thought the best acting he did was the Johnny Tremaine story. He's got like, there's like a slight chuckle and stuff as he's like, you can see he's like vividly remembering this. It's like, it's so bittersweet and it's so beautiful. And we're seeing he's harbored all this resentment for years because of what happened. And yet he's still able to remember the same thing. You can go back and watch the barbecue sauce scene in a totally different light now, knowing all this, seeing all this, and how, you know, how he talks about his dad used to take him to play darts, and that's completely changed. And we get into the Ted Lasso ethos. We know exactly why he is the way that he is. He says, I was never going to let anybody get by me without knowing if they were hurting inside. And that's this character through and through. We've seen that from the second he stepped off that plane in London. He wants to know how he cares about everyone, not just his players, not just Beard, not just everyone. He wants everyone to be okay. And he wants to make sure that they have someone to talk to, someone who can understand them or help them. And he's foregone his own mental health for so long, and now he's getting that help. And it's Corey, I mean, as a mental health advocate, like, this is as powerful a moment in TV as I can remember on that regard.
Yeah, I mean, it shows a complete range of grief. When he starts out, he's talking about, I'm mad at him, I hate him because he quit on his family. And like, you know, when you're not in the situation, when you're on the outside looking in, because I hear that and I go, but we all know that they're not in their right mind when they do that. And it's not, you know what I'm saying? But that's not, my dad hasn't killed himself, so I don't know how I'd feel in that situation. He goes from that to telling the story. And then he gets to the end, and you can, like you said, with his acting, you can start to see that he starts smiling a little bit. And he goes, he was a great dad, but I don't think he knew that. And I think that if he knew that, maybe he wouldn't have done what he did. And he starts crying. And then he has this realization of like, oh, right. Okay. The dude was clearly going through some things. And that, to me, that was the hopefulness at the end. Like, Ted's having panic attacks, but I think that one little moment right there is like, we're having a breakthrough, Ted. Like, you're, you know, obviously keep going to therapy, don't quit. But but yeah, man, that was really rough. But I mean, in my opinion, they're handling mental health better than I've seen any other show do it. Definitely better than Sopranos.
And Alex, last season we kind of talked about everything Rebecca had gone through with Rupert, and speaking of that, we're going to talk about that evil motherfucker here in a little bit. But we talked about that in trying to, you know, why Rebecca was the way that she was in season one, and you know how she was working through that, and then this episode we find out that runs way deeper, and this is a lifetime of trauma. This is not just a marriage, and Rebecca seems to be almost not, I don't want to say through it. I don't think anyone's ever through it, but Rebecca seems to be really, after this, she, you know, after talking to her mom and after, you know, confessing what she saw and hearing, like, she seems to be really on the way up and less bothered by Rupert at the end of the wedding than she was at the beginning of the wedding.
Yeah. I think another big breakthrough here, it wasn't just about her dad. We were able to see that clearly her relationship with her mom has been strained because of what her dad did. And when her mom, what was the line about, I'm glad you hate me. I thought you didn't feel anything at all for me, or I thought you were indifferent.
I would take your hatred over indifference any day.
Yes. Like, yeah. And it's so, and that was such a huge part of it. And just like, I know a lot of people didn't like the Rickrolling of the eulogy, but again, that was her way of supporting her mother and saying, you know, she realizes like there's a broken thing here that she still has the opportunity to fix. And I think, yeah, if Rebecca hadn't gone through what she had gone through, she would have been more likely to hold on to that hatred, because that's kind of what she was all about. And she's even admitted, you know, she pushes everyone away and never tries to be vulnerable. And I think she's had a lot of breakthroughs with that this season. And so I think her story and her growth too is just as important and powerful to watch as Ted's.
I want to talk about an honorable mention scene for me, but I want to give the floor to Alex on it, because she predicted this. She brought this evil into my life by texting me very upset, but she predicted it. Jamie confesses his love right away, but then right after, Roy confesses his insecurity, and Keely is caught between a rock and a hard place. Her emotions are in a bind. Alex, how did it feel to just watch your prediction just play out on screen? Yeah. Tell me, what is it like to be right? That must be nice.
Look, I'm just saying, I've been through some shit, y'all, when it comes to relationships, and I can call that stuff. Like, I may not be good at calling any other part of the storyline, but I can tell when a man is about to pull some shit. And so I knew back with the Roy and Keely fight episode that this was more than just, oh, we get to see them fight and we get to see normal couples fight too. She's like the sneaking around and smoking, even her reaction when he's interrupting her show, there's more going on with Keely. And Corey actually brought up a point I hadn't considered, because we were texting about last week. And, you know, the fact that her whole life, it wasn't just Roy that changed her life. She was suddenly not a model anymore. She's out of the spotlight. Her whole life is about serving other people or being someone's girlfriend or doing this, and how that could be having an effect on her, having to take a back seat all of a sudden. Corey, you can elaborate on that, so I'm not putting words in your mouth.
No, I mean, that's just, that was one thing. And I think it might just be because I'm one of them evil carny show people. when she started taking more of a behind the scenes role and stuff, I immediately made a mental note of that. And I go, okay, the shoe's going to drop on this, because like, you don't just go from I'm modeling and being sponsored by vodka companies and I'm famous for being famous to, oh, I'll just do this. I'll help other people. And I'm not saying that you can't eventually, you're not going to do that without having one last cigarette. You know what I mean? You're not quitting that cold turkey when you're that. And when she was with Jamie, that was the life. I mean, they were Kardashianing it up. It wasn't healthy, wasn't good, but like, I just get that. And my only thing is like, and I saw it whenever, you know, Jamie he's had a huge face turn this season, which I think is great. I love seeing Jamie battle his demons and you find out more about his dad. And like, oh, I understand why that dude would be like that. It's not excusing it, but I get it. You know, he can be redeemed. But I knew, I was like, he's going to do something shit ass, because just like how Keeley can't just cold turkey quit being Paris Hilton, he can't cold turkey quit being a little shit. And I know that him and Roy have like started getting on now, but like, he don't give a shit. Like if he can get Keeley back, he don't care. My only problem with it though is in most shows, I feel like it would be Keeley's not with Jamie anymore. She's with a level-headed like accountant type dude. And now it's like, oh, you're really going to leave this guy who's been really, really good to you just for the famous good-looking soccer player. But like, Roy also is a famous good-looking soccer player and he's better for her and he's nicer. So like, to me, it's like, it's not really that much of a competition. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because a lot of times in shows, it would be like the Jamie character confesses that love to her, walks away, and then lame boy, like, I'm going back to Eastbound
Ross
and Down,
Geller, which is, or whatever. Yeah.
I go back to Eastbound and Down, which is Kenny Powers and April, just a terrible couple. Kenny Powers, awful person. But in season one, she's with Cutler, who's just like that just straight up lame dude. Whereas Keeley turns around and there is Roy, not only being handsome, famous soccer player Roy, but then confessing his insecurity about death and telling that wonderful story about wishing praying for a year, wishing he could see his grandpa. And that's like, it's like right away, it's like, oh, look how adjusted and healthy this guy is. And again, that Roy and Keeley are so good at apologizing, which is a skill for couples. It is very, very important. Jamie, it's super shitty for Jamie to have done that, but it's, when you think about Jamie, that's probably the least shitty way he could have done that. Like, he didn't try to make a move. He just said it and he walked away. But that's probably my biggest question.
Did you know why Roy just happened to be there right when Keeley turned around? Because he's here, he's there, he's every fucking where. Roy Kent.
Did you guys watch The Newsroom? I didn't, but there's one scene that I know very well from it because everybody sends it to me all the time. It's just one of those scenes.
The Jeff Daniels one?
Jeff Daniels monologue? Yeah. I haven't
seen
The Newsroom.
The one with Jeff Daniels where he talks a lot? No, it's the one where he's in the psychiatrist's office and, Will is like really mad. Mackenzie was her name, right? That was his girlfriend's name who cheated on him. And he's explaining like, why can't... He's been kind of punishing her, I guess, for a while. Like she is his producer or something. I love how I know nothing about this show. And he's essentially asking him, why can't I get over it? Like, why can't I forgive her? And the psychiatrist says, because you were betrayed. She was rejected by the guy that she cheated on him with. And so being with him was a way to get unrejected. And it had nothing to do with Will. And he had to kind of get that through his head. I feel very similarly about Keeley. It's not that, I mean, she's the one who called it off. Yeah. But why? Because he was never going to love her because he was, messing around with other women. He wasn't very devoted. He didn't seem to care about her feelings. In a way, she got rejected. And I think I'm not justifying anything. I'm just saying, if you look at the situation, I don't think she has any doubt in her mind how she feels about Roy, but there's something that will stick with you when you know, like, well, why didn't you love me the way he does? Why didn't you think that? What is so wrong with me that you couldn't feel that way? And I just think that's what Keeley's going through. Because, I mean, Roy hadn't told her he loved her yet, had he? That was his first time.
Jacqueline mentioned that, too. I think that's the first time that we've heard it. That seems like it'd be, from what he's confessing, it seems like that would be an opportune time to say that if you're going to say that for the first time.
Yeah, so I think like they did that on purpose, that, the parallel and her going back and forth. I just don't think it's as clear cut as Roy is the better option. Of course he is, but people and their emotions, I hate feelings. This is the problem with feelings.
I've definitely gone for the worst option so many times in my life. I get it. I totally get it.
It's awful. And Jamie, we get really swept up in those moments where it's like, I know I shouldn't say this and it's not fair. No, it's not fair. And you shouldn't say it because you're just trying to make yourself feel better and you're not trying to help her. So it's not so much love on your part as it is you've been moved by a funeral and you took a selfish moment. So love you, Jamie, but that was a bullshit thing to do.
Yeah, he's come a long way, but fuck, man.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick ad break, get back with our funniest one-liner.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we are back. Corey, same thing as best seen as the guest. You were going first on this one. What was your favorite one-liner under the radar joke of this episode? Okay. This one slips in a lot.
It does. I will give you some also some honorable mentions. So honorable mention, Rupert says to Sassy, "Always a pleasure, Sassy." And Sassy says, "Fuck off and die, Rupert."
Sassy is such a real one in this episode.
Absolutely. Runner up. Another one is, "Congrats, mother. You've just fat shamed a baby to tears," which is Rebecca, which I thought was great. But to me, the best, this is, I don't know why it's very stupid, but I just think it's great. Sassy and Keely are having a conversation and Sassy goes, "Funerals are really weird." And Keely goes, "I was literally just talking about that. Do you also want to be a tree when you die?" And Sassy goes, "Hell yeah. Or a really stupid dog."
It's so good.
Yeah, it's great. Sassy came in hot in this episode.
So Sassy always comes in hot. Sassy doesn't have a chill, and I don't mean that in a negative way.
No,
Sassy,
it's good.
Is like, Sassy's high energy. Sassy comes off the bench and starts launching through.
Yeah, she's here to fuck, dude.
Indeed she is.
I don't have one other than that. I mean, I thought Avenge Me was just so good.
Right.
As we all know. And I don't know if there was like a one-liner in particular that stood out. I loved when, you know, at the end when Rebecca's mom's like, "That's not Rick Astley." It's like, I thought he was black. But I thought in general, the dialogue was just really good in this one. I love what Sassy said to Rupert in Hole, how she was going to wear red to his funeral. And like, what did she say? The other three people there.
Bring joy to the other three people who were there. to shine a joyful light on the other three people who were there.
Yeah. And even though I've gone on the record many times not supporting the Rebecca and Sam relationship, I love that. You know, Nora finds out, we were all kind of, I think it's bad. So not because they're age, because it's unethical. No. But anyway, you know, when Nora has a crush on him, and so I kind of tensed up thinking she might, you know, be upset about it. And she was like, "Boss ass bitch." I thought it was so cute.
Nora is also a real one. I have a favorite line that nobody has mentioned yet. When Roy and Keely are having their first initial disagreement about the tree, about being turned into a tree and being turned into a piece of fruit or whatever. And Keely says the thing about he won't eat a piece of fruit or whatever, but he'll eat a kebab that he found a hair on. And Roy says, "It's fine if you know who the hair is from. He's a nice bloke. It's part of the deal." Which is a callback to his kebab restaurant from earlier in the season.
And then later when he comes into the funeral home, just eating the apple with that shit-eating grin on his face, because he knew, he's like, "Say it. I've got a bit. I wrote a whole bit coming up here." It's adorable.
So good.
Also, when Dr. Sharon expresses her disdain for tea, and Ted says, "I'll tell you anything."
That's, well, now that we've already said that, that was my Ted moment. So
it's a great Ted moment.
Yeah, that was my favorite Ted moment, because all the other Ted moments were a knife in my heart.
It is an episode for that. Just it's I mean, we can just skip over to the best Ted moment. It's basically that entire thing with Dr. Sharon asking for a hug, asking if she's still gonna
bill him
for this and appreciating her integrity. And then going along with Rebecca's eulogy with the Rick Astley song, because of course Ted was the first one to pick that up.
Yeah. I thought that was such a sweet moment because he was there. And the fact that he walked in and obviously everybody's wondering why he was late, but he was still there and he showed up, and then he shows up in another way during the eulogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about what worked about this one that we haven't touched on yet. Something for me that's big is, of course, Rupert has grown a scumbag goatee. I'm not saying that works on Rupert, but it works for the shitbag character. He looks like a Bond villain who gets killed by his own cronies. It's as fitting a facial hairstyle on Rupert as you could apply. Like, how do we make this guy look more slimy? Let's throw a real bad goatee on the guy. It just, Corey, I don't know about you, that I think that fits him perfectly.
I love Rupert. Yeah, I think it's tremendous. I thought it was absolutely great. That guy, and the goatee does, it allows Rupert to just be able to make a face and you know exactly the type of piece of shit he is. I think it's tremendous.
And Alex, women in general have had, I'm sure in your life, you have had to wear some very uncomfy shoes to formal occasions and stuff your feet into things that there's just, you wish you could get out of. And our man, Danny Rojas, with his nice slick back hair and ponytail, is suffering in this episode. And that was a very nice bit of comic relief kind of sprinkled throughout some very heavy moments.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. And I like when he ends up in Rebecca's slippers and how grateful he is for it. I just love the whole, like, none of you can wear trainers bit.
Right.
they're so proud of their dress shoes. I thought it was great.
Oh, was I supposed to give my thing that I thought worked?
Yeah, what else?
And I skipped over. Okay. What worked for me was, this is a funeral episode, right? And it's also, without a doubt, the most positive and that Roy Kent has ever been. Like, Roy wasn't a dick the entire time. He was cutting some jokes, but he was smiling. He was in his own way, really trying to be there for Keeley, really trying to be we're in a couple, yada, yada, yada. And I thought that was a great juxtaposition of, like, normally Roy's miserable going to a nice dinner that someone's paying for. But for some reason, mm-hmm. going to a funeral, he's just like, oh, we'll get through it, won't we? I thought that was cool. Seeing that other side of Roy showing the right. Like, in this episode, you've got Ted, who's always overly optimistic and always smiling, absolutely breaking down, having a panic attack. And you've got Roy, who is usually a cynical dick, cutting jokes, doing Apple bits. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was great that Roy proved, like, I don't just have to be that guy. I'm just really charming.
Well, and I can also relate to how Roy goes about serious issues like death, joking and stuff like that. Cause that's something I do. I have,
for sure.
I have trouble approaching really serious issues. And it's like my panic reaction to just make a joke about it or just avoid the seriousness of it completely. Like, it's probably a problem. It's probably something I need to address with a therapist. But
top 10 hardest I've ever laughed in my life. I guarantee you 6 of them were at a funeral home. Guaranteed. Yeah. Especially if a comic died. Oh my God. You forget halfway through. You're like, oh right, we're here for, yeah.
No, I had to do my dad's eulogy and it was just joke after joke after joke. Yeah. Like, it was sweet, but it was every funny story I could possibly think to cram in there because I didn't want anyone to be sad. And I remember walking away from it that day being like, that was the way to do it. And then, like, a year later, it really upset me because I felt like I cheated people, like, out of, I don't know, an opportunity to cry. But then I'm like, nah. It's
that's for you.
Yeah.
And I just think, like, funerals in general, symbolically in storytelling, you know, it's a jarring thing because we get so used to life and we get so used to the terrible things about life, gestures everywhere. And you're faced with the reminder, it's all going to end. So you better figure it out now. And you better figure out what you want to do now and who you want to be with. Because it's all going to be over one day. And so what else are you supposed to do? But when you're not going to laugh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of the Roy motto as well. That's kind of what he tells Keeley about after that story about his grandpa. Real quick on what, let's go into what didn't work about this one. I have one thing that I don't want to say didn't work about the episode, but just made me upset and angry. And then one thing that I don't think legitimately worked, I want to start with that. Beard and Jane talking in the funeral and like him like live streaming the funeral. I just that seems like it was forced. I don't think they needed it. The show rarely makes missteps. And like, again, they don't do anything that isn't intentional. I don't. Corey, do you see any scenario where that comes back into play?
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, it was fine. It was really quick. But I was going to say one thing that didn't work for me is there wasn't really enough beard in the episode. Because after we had that standalone, I was like, I'm really falling more in love with this guy. He's really funny. He brings a lot to the table. But I agree. That one just, it wasn't needed. I mean, the episode's already 50 minutes. Like, you can cut that and it's no big deal. I was going to say, like, it was definitely that. My runner-up, but only because, like, pretty much everything worked in this. And I knew I had something to say. And y'all just mentioned that you liked it. And it was fine. The first two Danny Rojas shoe jokes, cool. But then I just, we could have cut a lot of those for time. Again, it's fine. Yeah. It wasn't bad, but you're making me say something out loud. And so that's what I'm going to go with. But it's like everybody else is fine. What, his feet just don't work in those shoes, for God's sakes. Come on.
Yeah.
Alex, did you have anything that didn't work?
I think, like, I agree with the beard thing. That was my main one. And it's not even so much that this didn't work, but you know, at the end when like Sassy leaves with Ted, can I just ask, where did Nora go? Nora has to get home somehow.
Right.
She wasn't there with anyone else.
I didn't think about that.
And it bothers me. And I realized that's such a mom thing to say, right? But like watching her go off, and it's like, where is your daughter?
I didn't even think about it. I'm like, it's Europe. They walk, they got gondolas. You know, she'll be all right.
Yeah. And
Nora seems very independent. I feel like if her mom was like, I'm going to go hang out with Mr. Lasso, she's like, I'm going to go see my friends.
And yeah. She's a boss.
Okay. We're both going to have a great afternoon.
Here's something that didn't work for me. I actually liked the Sam and Rebecca closet scene. What I liked about it is that he said, I've been wanting to do this all day, and he hugged her. It wasn't like some sordid, lustful thing.
Yeah.
What I didn't like is how he ended it with, I'm only going to get more wonderful. Like, at some point, somebody on the show has to address, even like when she told the girls about it, not one person is speaking up and saying, hey, maybe not the best idea, especially now that you're going through this.
Yeah. I mean, Rebecca's the only one who's saying not the best idea.
Sure. I don't want to be the dude who does this, but you, since Alex brought it up, if the roles were reversed, it would look a lot different. You know what I'm saying? Like, if this was a WNBA basketball coach and he was hooking up with one of the chicks, we would probably not be like, yay, go for it. You do you. It's not, because it's not the age, but we do live in a time, rightfully so, to where we are calling out, you know, people that are in positions of power, taking advantage of people that are their inferiors. And I mean, while obviously I go, yeah, it's not the same thing. Technically it is. And to have it just be on the show and not even like, if people were like, at least mentioning that, it'd be like, okay, well, they're going to like address that, but they're not. It's just like, yeah, whatever. It's an older woman and a soccer player. And so it's totally fine, but it just doesn't, I just can't envision the scenario and where they break up and it's just like, well, okay, I'm still on the team and I love Sam. I don't want anything bad to happen to him.
No. Yeah. I don't think
they're not going to address it either. I don't think that ended in the closet.
Right. Right.
Sure. I think there are just too many women writers on the show and they're all brilliant for them to leave it alone. I just don't like that the only tension so far for this has been like that it's a secret, you know, and that they want to go public and they're having to sneak around. It's just a weird thing to me. And I think as much as we talk about power dynamics and predatory people, I mean, we can all look back. We grew up with the Clinton Lewinsky case and how many of us were conditioned as kids to think that she was somehow the villain, this 22-year-old woman who had the most powerful man in the world coming onto her. And it took us years to be removed from that and realize, hey, actually he took advantage of a situation there. I know they'll answer it. I know there'll be something. Everything's intentional. It just really bugged me. And then when he has those lines, like, I'm only going to get more wonderful. It just doesn't work for me.
No, I'm with you. That's because to me, like, if Sam, you are wonderful, you wouldn't say that. Like, a real wonderful person wouldn't say that. And I do believe Sam is wonderful.
Yeah, there's wonderful. We're definitely not done with that storyline. There's one other thing. I don't want to say it didn't work for me, but it made me feel unpleasant. It's something that I think a few episodes ago, early in the season, and this was something that I was pretty adamant about, is they'll address this Nate thing. Nate will figure out what's going on with it. Will snap out of it. We'll fix this. He'll be sweet, precious Nate. And I don't think it's setting up like that. We've only got two episodes left. He's still being awful. He wants to come back as a tiger to ravage people, like straight up, you know, he's still got that spiteful thing, the same thing that has him lashing out at Colin in earlier episodes. He tries to come up with something more clever than sorry for your loss. It's just a terrible, terrible look. And then whatever that evil motherfucker Rupert whispered into Nate's ear as he is leaving that funeral, whatever it was not good.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, nothing good will come of that.
I'm glad you brought that up because I noticed that on the second watch and I was like, okay. Part of me was like, well, if we were meant to hear it, we would. But at the same time, they didn't just do that for no reason. Like, there's no way that, like, why would they do that? Why would that be a scene action? Hey, go whisper something to his ear if we're not.
And why would Rupert talk to Nate?
Exactly. Right. There you go.
Not to do something
like
bad.
He's not a player. He's not a player that he'd be like, oh, love you, seeing you out there. Like, Rupert has no reason other than to, like, yeah, man, you're right. I'm really glad you brought that up. I hope something diabolical happens. I love Nate, by the way, but I'm fine with him falling from grace so that he can come back. Cause I could understand with Nate, you know, you pushed around, you've kind of been the dweeb and now all of a sudden you're hot shit. He's never got to experience any of that. It's going to go to your head. Like Bill Murray said one time he was talking about Chevy Chase and he said, you know, when you get famous, you've got 2 years and you're going to be the biggest asshole in the world. And that's not your fault. You've got 2 years to be a big asshole. You've never experienced anything like this. The world's coming at you fast. You don't know how to handle it. After those 2 years, though, you have to decide if that's how you're going to be the rest of your life or if you're going to be a good person. And I think we all know what Chevy Chase decided to do. That was the quote.
Here's the thing. I don't think the show, whenever the show is done at the end of season three, I don't think the show will leave Nate as Chevy Chase. I don't think that's the show's MO.
I don't either.
Will they let him, will he leave Alex? Will he leave the season as this same guy or as even taking a step forward in, I don't want to say villain, but in this persona that has gripped him for this season?
Well, I think if you look at the scene, it wasn't just that Rupert whispered something to him. It's that right before he did, he told Rebecca that they're selling off the shares of the club. To me, it's pretty obvious. Like, he's either bought a club or he's starting a new club and he wants Nate to be part of it. Right. Oh. So, and I called that earlier. Shit.
Oh my God.
And didn't I call that like a few episodes ago?
I predicted you did, yes.
Something like that. I could see this ending up. With him,
I should have taken one of my whiteboards. It's right behind me and started keeping a running Alex theory list and check them off.
Yeah. And so I don't think we're going to see, and I could be wrong, but I don't think we're going to see redemption with Nate yet. I think this season is probably going to end with kind of a cliffhanger of him leaving and going to Rupert's club. And you know, something I was thinking about, and I might've brought this up on a previous episode. I don't think I did, you know, Nate's transformation didn't just happen this season. Like, we saw some aggression out of him last season, even in the last episode where they make him a coach and he goes after Rebecca and he's like, you shrew, what did you do? He's got issues that are much more than just I've been promoted and you know, he's got to deal with a lot of that. And we can't wrap that up in two episodes. So I do think that's going to definitely play out, but I think it'll be season three before we get any closure there.
Yeah, I have a theory. I might drop that theory at the end of this episode, which is coming up here very shortly before that. Lenny Harris pinch hitter award for best supporting character, Corey, who was the best non-Ted or Rebecca character in this episode.
I'm going with Rebecca's mom, 100%. I thought that she stole all the scenes she was in. I thought her emotional journey was great. I love that actress. She is just cute as a bug in a rug. I just thought it was sweet. I don't know. I really enjoyed that dynamic. She was there to, you know, sort of inform us more about why Rebecca is the way she is. And I just really like her. When she comes in there, she's just one of them actresses that when I see her, I'm just like, oh, yay, something good.
Well, the first time she pops up, she sees Sam in his boxers and gives us the line, and like clunky exposition, they leave little to the imagination.
Yep.
That's a good line. I forgot about that.
Yep. Alex, who's your favorite supporting character?
Sassy. I gotta go with Sassy on this. I just thought she was so great and
hard to beat.
Smart, and it's always good when she shows up, and love that Ted's gonna get some. Also, did we notice she sort of insinuated that he's packing?
Mm-hmm.
Did I mean, do we have any doubt that Ted Lasso is packing?
I don't know. I see him being a very generous lover regardless. So to me, I never really thought about his penis size, but you know, you can make it work.
I thought about it a lot. Yeah. I think it's definitely more than enough to write home about for sure.
Good for you, Ted.
As we roll into questions you want answered to the next episode, it's kind of at this point, it's like, what do we think? What do we need wrapped up? It's not even what do we want answered. What is going to be wrapped up? What is coming at the end of this season? You know, is Nate, I think the Nate, whatever Nate said, or Rupert said to Nate, I think that is going to come out to play in the next episode. I think Nate is going to make a play either for the head coaching job at AFC Richmond or moving to wherever Richard is. I think, Rupert. I think there's no way that whatever Rupert said wasn't devious. That's a big thing that needs to be answered. And then Corey, where do you think we're going with Keely and Roy?
I genuinely have no idea. And I couldn't tell by Keely's reaction. You know, when Jamie says what he says, you can tell that she's like, oh my God, all these old emotions start coming back to her. Then she turns to Roy. And probably in like, you know, a sitcom like The Office or something like that, as soon as Roy did his spiel, there would be the whole, and it was that moment that I realized I'd made the right choice. But we didn't get that. Even with a facial expression, like you could still tell that she was like shocked at both of these things coming at her. And I genuinely don't know. And there's going to be a lot more than just which man is right for me at play for Keely. It's which lifestyle is best for me with Jamie. Yes, Roy's way better for me and I actually like him more, but with Jamie, I'm on The Bachelor again or whatever. I'm doing the wearing leopard print and chugging vodka. I'm curious to see what happens there. I really don't want to get my heart broken, but at the same time, I love conflict. With Ted, you know that his issues are not going to be wrapped up by season's end. That's a lifelong journey, so we don't really have to worry about that. Now that you've said this, though, about Nate and Rupert, I'm starting to put in my head, I'm like, oh, Ted is having panic attacks and problems and Nate's going to go after the head coaching job and Rupert's going to use that as like, hey, he's not really fit. You'd be doing everybody a service. Now that's what I'm looking forward to. Cause you've screwed my head up.
Sorry. I do that to people.
No, in a good way.
Alex, what do you think is coming down the pipeline or what needs to be answered? What do you need to be answered in the next two episodes?
Something we need answered that we've forgotten about is that one scene a few episodes ago where Trent Krim approaches him in the bar and asks him what happened to him on the field. And so back then my theory was at some point they were going to interview Nate, you know, cause he's like boy wonder, and that Nate would let it slip, you know, that he had a panic attack or whatever, but like, that's got to go answered because he just wanted a statement from him. So something's going to come out and I think there's going to be some story, but I also think the Sam and Rebecca thing has potential to become a story too. And so I'm curious to see what goes public, I guess, out of everything that's happened. Plus we have, you know, part of Ted's monologue in this one about his dad that I think was the most, not the most telling, but, you know, he mentions he grabbed a Coors Light out of the fridge and drank it. Mm-hmm. We've seen him, we haven't seen him directly have drinking problems, but we've seen him drinking a lot this season in terms of more than we did last season. And they're doing
whiskey,
that on purpose.
Whiskey too.
Yes. You know. Whiskey. And like him having that bottle of scotch in his cabinet to give Jamie on the Christmas episode, just having it so he could give it to him. But we also see Dr. Sharon when he went to her apartment, all the wine bottles. And we see a scene later where she spilled some wine on her table. I don't know what they're going to do with that either. And, you know, I don't think they're just going to leave it there, but it's hard to think that this season can end cleanly. I think it's going to end a little bit messy on purpose.
What was our main source of, like, as we were going into the season one finale, was it pretty much just like, will AFC Richmond get relegated? Because we had a good feeling about Keely and Roy. They might have already gotten together at that point. There wasn't really anything else that was really leaving us that much on edge. It was pretty much gearing up for that game against Man City and is AFC Richmond going to get relegated. And now I feel like we have so much that like could go either way. And I'm just very ready to be surprised. I don't think they'll go chalk on anything. Ready for something to come out of left field and really shock us in this one.
It's going to be awful.
Yeah, it just crossed my mind. I was like, we hadn't talked about soccer once. That's how awesome this show about soccer is. But yeah, the stakes have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, because the soccer itself seems to be going well. They made it to the semifinals of that tournament, and they seem to have been a long shot. So like, it seems like things are going well in that regard. I think the biggest thing with soccer is going to be if Nate is going to make a play for this head coaching job, or what's, like Alex said, what's going to. I had completely forgotten about that. Trent Krim, because the thing we know about Trent Krim, it used to be that he could turn out a full profile in 24 hours, but
in one night, it's amazing.
Now he seems to be biding his time on some investigative reporting. So I don't know. My gut is Nate is going to be used as a vessel of evil in some way or another, and you know, hopefully we get a redemption for Nate, because I really loved him. Sweet, sweet, precious, get off the grass, Nate. Corey, this was wonderful, sir. I'm so happy that you joined us for this episode. Tell the folks again where they can follow you on social media, where they can check out your upcoming tour dates.
You go to wellreadcomedy.com. That's WELLRED comedy.com. Or just follow me on Twitter, or if you Google me, stuff pops up and you can just click them things. But hey, I thank y'all so much for having me. It was an honor and a privilege.
Of course, you'll have to come back. Alex, where is the content? Where can the folks check that out?
ftw.usatoday.com, or just follow me at Alex McDaniel, or just follow For the Win at For the Win. You'll find the content. The content's there.
Content is always there. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review. If you are on Apple Podcast, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/bigscreensports. We'll be back on Monday with another episode talking five favorite fictional bands in honor of the 25th anniversary of That Thing You Do coming out. Just incredible, incredible movie. Go treat yourself to it this weekend. And we'll catch you next week with another Ted Lasso recap. Thanks for listening.